Bioshock. Right place, right time, wrong guy. Part 1. Wrong place, the wrong time. The best laid plans. And it was simple. Create a pawn from your own worst enemy, make him into a tool you can control, get him to do your dirty work, then toss him aside and take control. All you need to do is put him where he'll do what comes naturally. Survive. The problem is, engineering plane crashes you can survive isn't exactly what you call an exact science. I remember fighting my way to the surface, seeing pieces of the plane falling and sinking. I didn't know which way was up until I saw the pieces of the plane going down. Good thing, too. My lungs were on fire by the time I broke the surface, and the fire of the downed plane helped me see how bad my situation was. Parts of the plane were still on the surface, and the ocean was aflame. I thought the whole world was on fire for a few seconds. A coughing to my right brought me out of it. Somebody else had survived. I started to swim over when I saw other lights to my right, and I realized there was some building out in the middle of the ocean. I took a closer look. It looked like a lighthouse. My arms and legs were starting to tire from the stress as I moved to the other survivor, grabbing his torso under his arms and swimming towards the lighthouse. He didn't fight me, but he was still alive, that much I knew. I found the break in the flames and managed to get to the lighthouse, finding a staircase and lights. As I dragged the other survivor up the steps, I got a better look at him, discovering two things, one right after the other. First, the survivor was the same son of a bitch that caused this whole thing in the first place, taking a gun from nowhere and shooting the pilot and the co-pilot and forcing the plane down here. The second was that there was a large piece of metal stuck in the middle of his torso. He was dying. No, he was already dead. His body just didn't know it yet. I grabbed his shirt, pulled him up, seawater dripping onto his face from mine. "Why?" I demanded, shaking him. "They're all dead. Why?" He looked up at me and my rage vanished, drained out of me like air from a balloon. He didn't say anything, but the look on his face said what his lips couldn't. He looked like a lost kid. Then his eyes closed and his troubles were over. I checked him over, see if I could find the gun he used. No luck. Did find a wallet, some money, picture of the guy with his parents. Nothing I could really use. The only other thing about him that struck me were his wrists. Why would anyone get chain links tattooed on the undersides of their wrists? I sat down the steps. It was starting to get colder, and I was no closer to getting answers, but I was alive at the very least. I got to my feet, walking up the steps and hugging my chest. Starting to get cold. As I walked up the large double doors of the lighthouse, I looked up at the light at the top. What was something like this doing here? Lighthouses are supposed to warn people away from danger. This wasn't a warning. This is more like a beacon. I think this guy, this Jack, was trying to get here. But why? He wasn't bringing anything here. All he had on him were the gun and the wallet and clothes. They had seaplanes. He could have just chartered a plane here. I looked inside. It was dark, but it was warmer, so I took a few steps into the building to see if I could find the light switch. I heard a creaking sound and turned around just in time to see the door slam shut, plunging me into complete darkness. Great job, I thought to myself. Out of the frying pan. And then the lights came on, loud, bell-like sounds announcing more lights. I released the breath I was holding, turned around, and got the shock of my life. Somebody was looking down at me with a very stern expression. I backed up a step as I saw a very large bust of a man's head and shoulders looking down at me like some hanging judge. Underneath the bust was a red banner with gold lettering that said, "No gods, no kings, only man." Oh yeah, that didn't look ominous at all. I caught sight of a metal plate and looked down. As I read it, something occurred to me. This Jack guy was trying to get here. And since I don't think he was trying to kill himself, That means someone built this place for a reason. That meant support. That meant food and shelter. I took off my jacket, hanging it on a light fixture to dry. Then I considered. Might be a good idea to look around first before I relaxed and warmed up. I saw a set of stairs going down and followed them, hearing my shoes squish as they went down the steps. As I went down, I saw the chamber under the main one was a dock of some kind, but the craft inside was some kind of submarine. Didn't exactly have a whole lot to it, just one switch for controls, upholstered seats, just big enough to hold 8 people with luggage, and a strange box marked service radio. And it was weird and strange, but it was a way out. I let my clothes dry out, half wondering if anyone was going to come through the door and catch me in my skivvies. Didn't happen, thank God, but my clothes itched when I put them back on after they dried. I steeled myself, prepared myself for the unknown, walked into the sub, and pulled the switch. Nothing. Well, that was something of a letdown. I checked it over. By all rights, this thing should have worked. I didn't spend all my time in college at toga parties, although a lot of the mechanics and electronics in the sub were revolutionary, to say the least. I could still make heads or tails of the basic principles. From the look of it, it worked on external signals, and there was some sort of authorization code it needed to work. Pretty complex stuff. I sat down after spending hours looking over the sub. My watch was the only thing that let me know the time was passing. There were no windows in the lighthouse, and the doors wouldn't open. 10 hours here, and I barely cracked the surface. If I'd known how scarce food was going to be, I wouldn't have said no to the peanuts on the plane. I woke up thirsty as hell and determined to figure this mess out. I got up and stretched inside the sub. The cushioned seats made for great beds, but this place had lousy room service. I took out the quarter I'd been using as a screwdriver and opened up a panel under the switch. There was a way to bypass the lock, but it was a real puzzle. Change the alignment there, replace... I stopped. It couldn't be that simple, could it? There was a flow of some fluid going through the system that acted as some kind of conductor. I switched the flow around, redirected it towards a bypass, and I stood up and pulled the switch for the 57th time, crossing my fingers for the 38th time. There was a spark from the panel, then the door behind me closed, and I felt the sub shift. I dropped into the water, and I felt my ears starting to pop. I took a deep breath and walked to one of the seats. As I waited, the lights dimmed and a screen came down in front of me. An image came on the screen of a stylized version of the lighthouse, like some kind of logo, then a picture of a man lighting a cigarette but using a flame from his finger, with some chipper music playing in the background. What's more, the picture looked like, well, an advertisement. While I was trying to get my mind around that, the scene changed to a picture of a guy behind a desk with the words, "From the desk of Andrew Ryan," to the side. "I am Andrew Ryan," a recorded voice came, making the word sound like the announcement of somebody who thought he was really important. "And I have a question." I continued to listen as he went on. He didn't like governments or religion much, since they apparently kept making him follow rules he didn't like. He went on about finding a place, or making a place, where people like him could live without being held back by the rules of lesser beings. I started to feel a chill creep up my spine as he talked about not being held back by morality. I grew up going to church every Sunday, and the idea about somebody who thought the Holy Trinity was art, science, and industry struck me as a very bad idea. Then the screen rose away, and that's when I really knew I was no longer on the map. Through the window of the door, I could see what looked like a city with skyscrapers and all, but underwater. I probably looked like a rube as I watched a whale, swim between buildings, schools of fish. And that's when I heard other voices on the radio. New voices talking about the sub, only they called it a bathysphere, and something about splicers coming. As I watched the bathysphere heading for a dock of some kind, I saw it pass through a series of signs that read, Burmeshave style, "All good things of this earth flow into the city. only as the word city lit up, the Y shorted out and fell off the sign. Real comforting. I was starting to think I was better off locked in a lighthouse by myself. As the bathysphere rose, I tried to see what was going on, but the room I was rising into was dark. I could barely make out details, but what I was seeing made me glad I couldn't see everything. Some woman with bailing hooks in her hands was eviscerating some guy right in front of me. After dropping the poor guy into the water, she turned to me. I backed out counting my blessings that I was inside a metal object. I mean, what was she going to do? Force her way in with a couple of hooks? Then she leaped up on top of the bathysphere. I tried to back up further as noises came from all around the craft, horrible clanging and shrieking noises. Then I saw tears in the middle and crimps in the plates. How the hell was a single woman with metal hooks able to peel this bathysphere like an orange? I was getting ready to need some new pants when the noises stopped and that maniac leaped to the dock in front of the sub, then leaped away into the darkness. I realized that I was hyperventilating and forced myself to calm down. "Would you kindly pick up that service radio?" came one of the new voices. I figured any help was better than none, and I grabbed the radio. "Who is this?" "I don't know. You survived that plane crash, but I've never been one to question Providence. I'm Atlas, and I'm to keep you alive. Now keep on moving. We're going to have to get you to higher ground." The door in front of me opened, and I suddenly realized how vulnerable I was in this place. "Take a deep breath and step out of the bathysphere. I won't leave you twisted in the wind," Atlas reassured me. As I stepped out, I got the feeling that whoever this Atlas guy was, he knew I was here, and he could probably see me. I thought about calling out, but the more I looked around, the more I figured that calling attention to myself was bad. The chamber I was in was huge, with other docks and piled up luggage nearby, as well as protest signs like "Ryan doesn't own us" in particular caught my eye. Looks like Ryan isn't exactly the godsend he thinks he is. The area I was in looked like a major terminal. The bathyspheres must have had preset routes with conductors running them like trains. However, the scheduling boards all showed that bathysphere travel had been cut off. The area also showed severe disrepair, crumbling supports, and vandalism. "This can in no possible way be a good thing. We're going to need to draw out of hiding, but you're going to have to trust me," Atlas said carefully. I took a deep breath and walked closer. Then a sudden shriek got my attention, and I got a better look at the woman who'd torn the bathysphere up. And when I did, I wished I hadn't. The woman was wearing some sort of striped jumpsuit, but her face was horribly misshapen, the skin bulging on one side. The snarl on her face didn't exactly improve the look any. She took a step forward, and then a bright light illuminated her, startling her and giving me a better look at her. There were lesions on her skin and discolored areas. She looked like her body had decided to declare war on itself. "How do you like that, sister?" Atlas crowed as a helicopter-like contraption came out from behind me, and then I dove for cover as I heard machine gun fire. I looked up as the machine fired upon the woman, chasing her up into the darkness. "Now, would you kindly find a crowbar or something? Bloody splices sealed Johnny in before they..." "Goddamn splices." So that was a splicer. Splicer must be slang for a crazy, whacked-out fugitive from a monster flick. Imagine the joy of discovery, compounded by the knowledge that there was more than one of these things around. "Listen, Atlas, I need you to tell me what's going on," I said into the radio as I looked around for something I could use as a weapon. "Long story, Boyle. I'll tell you what I can." There was something in his voice. Something he wasn't telling me. I didn't let slip I guessed that, since even a half-truth was better than nothing at all. I found a wrench and swung it. "Oh, yes, this would do nicely." "What's your name?" Atlas said. "Name's Mark." Silence at the end of the line. Then, "Where are you from, Mark?" "California. Just graduated from college a few years back, was on my way back from a job in Europe when some nut job hijacked the plane and forced it down." More silence. "What happened to him?" he asked, his voice trying to sound nonchalant. "Died in the crash, flipped out halfway, shot the pilot and the co-pilot. I shook my head. Poor bastard. More silence. And as soon as I heard it, I knew that this guy knew about Jack. The whole thing had been planned. However, the why was still a mystery. If this guy was willing to kill a plane load of people just to get Jack here, he'd leave me twisting in the wind, despite his reassurances, if he thought for a moment that I was onto him. And I wanted out of this half-crazed Atlantis. Look, Atlas, I have no idea what's going on here. I'm going to trust you, but I need to rely on you. You're the only friend I got down here, I added, letting some of the fear I was feeling creep into my voice. Not hard to do, considering the situation. I had to control it, though, and I had to convince Atlas that I trusted him without question. It's going to be all right, Mark, but I need you to help me. Listen, I've got a family. I need to get them out of here, but the splices have cut me off from them. If you can reach him in Neptune's bounty, then maybe, just maybe. I know you must feel like the unluckiest man in the world right now, but you're the only hope I'll ever see my wife and child again. Go to Neptune's bounty. Find my family. Please. The hook. There it was. You let me survive down here, I'll do whatever you say, I asked quickly, hoping he'd read desperation instead of just garden variety trust. I looked at the rubble and used the wrench to knock it away so I could crawl through, barely dodging a burning sofa as I went up the stairs. As I dodged it, I suddenly heard a voice coming from above. I didn't mean to hurt anyone! I looked up and jumped back, nearly losing my footing on the steps as a man with a bandaged head came from around the corner. He moved in on me. I couldn't tell if he was angry or not. His face was losing its fullness and was hanging off his head like a latex mask. I didn't have a choice. God forgive me, it was either him or me. I just swung that wrench as hard as I could. I hit him in the head and I thought he'd fall, but he just shrugged it off and kept right on coming with that pipe, trying to bury it in my skull. I had to hit him 4 more times before he'd fall and stop getting up. I backed away from him. I turned away and threw up, spitting up stomach acids. Didn't have any food in my stomach to get rid of, and my throat burned like a son of a bitch. When the nausea passed, I looked at the blood-covered corpse, and moved past him carefully into the next room. A sign in neon read Plasmids, pointing upstairs to a sign showing what looked like a Norman Rockwell painting, only this one showed happy people throwing lightning, lighting fires, moving things with their minds. It was all so surreal. How is any of this possible? The only other door out was operated by a switch, but it was damaged. Was nothing easy? I sighed and hand up the stairs, curious to know what this was all about. It was so cute, it's scary. An innocent-looking vending machine from the 1940s. Two cartoonish girls flanking it, mushrooms and flowers, all made of steel and tin. On it were the words, Gatherer's Garden. One of the doors on it was open, revealing a metal and glass bottle with a glowing red liquid inside, a syringe next to it. Atlas, I'm trapped in a room with something called a Gatherer's Garden in it. How do I get out? You're going to need that plasma to get through the door. How? Is there a red bottle you can get to? Yeah. Why? Use a syringe and inject yourself in it. Say again? Trust me. And there it was. I had to take the plunge and let him think I did trust him, or hesitate and blow my only advantage. The illusion of control over me. God hates a coward, I thought, and injected myself with the witch's brew. There was a burning sensation as it went in, the red liquid going into my bloodstream as if I injected sulfuric acid into it. Then the burning changed and the empty syringe dropped from my hands as arcs of blue energy coursed over my arms. It hurt. Dear God, it hurt. Atlas was saying something to me about my DNA being rewritten, and I must have turned and rushed towards the railing as if I could run from what was infusing itself painfully into every cell of my body. Hit the railing and over and the floor rushing up to meet me. I woke up, hearing voices. I tried to move, but nothing would work. Pinocchio's strings were cut. This little fish looks like he just had his cherry popped. Wonder if he's got any atom on him. I had to get up. I don't know what they wanted, but from the blood caking their clothes, I didn't think they were going to be satisfied with going through my pockets. I had to get up, but my body wouldn't respond. If my body had been allowed to, I'd be shaking like a leaf in a hurricane. I heard something else then, a faraway sound like a long groan. I didn't know what made it, but whatever it did, whatever it was, it made one of them spin around as if he'd been caught with his hand in the cookie jar. You hear that? Let's bug. Wake! His friend spat. You're awake, Chopper! First man ran off, calling back, this little fish ain't worth towing it with no Big Daddy. Yellow, always have been. He didn't sound so secure, then leaned down to me again. You'll be no better off with the metal daddy, little fish. See you floating in the briny. Then he took off after his friend. All I could do was lay there, wondering why he was wearing a cat mask. Then I felt something closer, great clanking footsteps. If I could have held my breath, I would have. All I could do was lay there, eyes open, waiting as I saw a giant foot come into view, as well as a huge cone ridged like a corkscrew. Oh my God, it was a drill! When my vision cleared the next time, I saw the dress, legs, and bare feet of a girl. She couldn't have been older than 7. I tried to turn my head to get a better look, but my body's muscles refused to work. Look, Mr. Bubbles, she said, but her voice had this reverberating tone, like she was at the opposite end of a long tunnel. It's an angel. I can see light coming from his belly. I exerted every ounce of control I could gather and only succeeded in shifting my body an inch or so. Wait a minute. He's still breathing. She saw me. She heard me. Thank God. I managed to strangle. Help me. It's all right, she said soothingly, and her next words chilled me to the very bones. I know he'll be an angel soon. With that, the two walked off. I managed to turn my head to watch them go. She was skipping. I closed my eyes again. I have no idea how long I was out this time, but I found strength returning to my body, and I got to my feet looking around frantically. You all right, boyo? First time plasmid's a real kick for a mule, but there's nothing like a fistful of lightning now, is there? I looked at my hands. My right hand looked normal enough, but my left. There was electricity coursing around my, like my hands were at Jacob's ladder. How do I use it? Use your left hand, hold it out to whatever you want to shock, and think about pushing the charge out of your palm. I tried it, and it worked too well, hitting the floor and licking at my feet, making them tingle. I jumped back and looked at my hand. I suddenly felt tired, drained. I must have some internal battery that the power gets drawn from. I suddenly realized what that meant. This energy was finite. How do I, recharge? You use Eve, blue glowing hypos. That'll fill you up right. And if I run out of rate, then if I run out of this Eve stuff, then getting out of here alive becomes a lot less likely. Right, good survival tip. Thanks. Feeling the charge stress testing the nerve endings of my feet told me that even though I had the means to channel Mjolnir, it did make me immune to the effects of being on the receiving end of such a blast. I also felt the change on another level as well, and I remember the first splicer I ran into, remembering how he looked, what all these plasmids must have done to him. I'd taken the first step towards ending up like that. Where was a line between power and madness? I'd seen one of my dorm mates turn into a junkie back in college. At some point he said to me, I can control it. I'm not going to let it control me. I can stop any time I want. I had become disgusted at what he'd become, felt superior, because I told myself, oh, I'll never be somebody like that. Now I was looking at the fresh puncture wound in my arm, which was already starting to heal up. I felt the power in my veins, already looking forward to using it again. All it would cost me is a little bit of my soul. How much of that was I going to have left by the time I got out of here? Now, to get out of there, you're going to need to shock the door switch, and that'll let you out of the room. I shook my head as Atlas spoke, remembering the first rule of Rapture: survive now, think later. I fired off a charge at the door nearby, delighted to see it cause the door to open, revealing a tunnel beyond made of metal and glass. There was something like it that made it easy to see the ocean around without him to worry about little things like crush depth. Despite my misgivings about the plasmid, I was beginning to envision useful applications for this. I walked through the door, and I felt a shudder as I turned to my left. It was the tail section of the plane. Freed from the rest of the fuselage, it sunk to the bottom, coming to rest on an outcropping of rock just overlooking the tunnel I just entered. The construction of the transparent walls were well made. I could see the tail section teetering on the edge of the rock, then slide off and fall, moving like a guided missile directly for the tunnel, and smash into the side, and the ocean began to rush in to fill the void. I felt the freezing cold of the water, the shock of it nearly causing me to pass out. Then I realized that he who hesitates is fish food. I ran forward, my teeth chattering, as I found myself in the tail section again, looking at the red exit sign on the right of the hatch as I waded through the water and out the other side, heading down the tunnel. I heard the cracking of the glass over my head, and panic gave strength and speed to my legs as I ran past one overworked pressure door to another one that opened for me at the far end. I ran inside, collapsing as the door behind me closed and sealed shut. I looked up at the door behind me to see the words, "Airlock active." I felt the cold threaten to rob me of my strength, and I forced myself to get up, seeing frost forming on the legs of my pants. I beat the cold off, getting to my feet. I had to stay alive, stay active, and stay warm, or my heart would fail as cold blood rushed to it. As I got up, I heard a scraping sound, and someone rushed past my vision. I was wrong. He who hesitates is not fish food. He who hesitates is fucked. I rested in the elevator. From here, I had a wonderful view of some of the architecture of Rapture, including banners and a large sculpture of something called the Great Chain. I just killed two splicers, overloading their nervous systems with the electro bolt, then beating up the wrench. I kept telling myself that it was okay. If I hadn't killed them, they most certainly would have killed me. That made it acceptable, but it was a far cry from being okay. I listened to Atlas over the radio. He said that he was on the other side in a war between the elite of Rapture versus the overlooked and oppressed poor. He told me about his wife, Mora, and his son, Patrick, how he didn't want to fight the war anymore. He just wanted to leave Rapture with them. I couldn't blame him for that. I'd only been in Rapture about an hour, and already I wanted nothing more to do with the place. But suspecting what I knew about him and that poor bastard who died trying to crash a plane in just the right spot, things were not adding up. This was a sob story made to tug at the old heartstrings, but I couldn't let him think that I suspected. Atlas, I promise, I'll get to Neptune's bounty, but you gotta help me out here. I could hear Ned's voice. I'd sold him on the idea of helping to keep me alive at least long enough, hopefully, to find out the all-important question, why. But I knew that someone willing to kill a whole plane load of people just to get his confederate from point A to point B was not going to trust me much either. And I knew he figured on throwing me to the wolves as soon as it became clear I was no longer useful. What's more, he was watching me somehow. Not surprising. Any place capable of creating security contraptions like the one that chased that splicer away obviously had the means to create some sort of security cameras as well. And that they were using some kind of recognition algorithm, a kind of identify friend or foe system. And that meant I needed a way to make this place recognize me as a citizen. I thought about bringing it up to Atlas, but I changed my mind. Atlas knew this place better than I did, and if he's as smart as I think he is, he's already working on the problem. I needed to let him think that he was in control, that he was smarter than me. If I asked him how he'd fix things, he might start thinking that I might be smart enough to figure him out, and the deus ex machina he supplied me would be gone faster than you can say, "Sorry, boyo." The elevator stopped and I walked out, hearing a woman's voice off to my right. I moved closer and saw a shadow of a woman standing over a baby carriage, singing a variation of Hush Little Baby I hadn't heard before. Then hearing her begin to sob, confused, talking to her baby as if it wasn't even there, and somehow was. I wondered what I'd do to get past a splicer with an actual child until I took a closer look in the carriage. The woman was dressed in a dress and hat 10 years out of style, her face scarred. She looked every bit the grieving mother, except she wasn't touching a child, or even the corpse of a child, as I'd feared. She was caressing a revolver. Her brain was probably more scarred than her face. I shocked her, then hit her from behind, putting her out of her misery. I picked up the gun as I heard Atlas say, "Plasmids changed everything. They destroyed our bodies, our minds. We couldn't handle it. Best friends butchering one another, babies strangled in cribs. Whole city went to hell." As he talked, I began to go over the things I picked up. Scavenging from the dead splicers in the air around me resulted in finding those blue hypos Atlas told me about, as well as white and red tins. First aid kits that came with some sort of gel. The directions instructed me to squeeze the gel on the areas of my body that were damaged. As I applied the gel, I literally saw the burns and bruises I'd suffered fade away to nothing. It was a miracle, pure and simple. Problem is, it was beginning to look like I was going to need to repeat this miracle on a regular basis. I injected another hypo of the blue stuff into my veins, feeling whatever reservoir that fueled this plasmid return to full. "What's this stuff called again?" I asked Atlas. "It's called Eve," he replied. He sounded a bit preoccupied. "Adam? Eve? For someone who hates the idea of God, Ryan sure put in a lot of biblical references when he named this stuff." "Not his idea. He didn't discover this stuff." There was something in the way he said it. A sense of pride. That meant... well, I didn't know what that meant, at least not yet. I made my way through the Casimir restaurant, looking around, seeing decorations, party favors, a large sign in neon proclaiming, "Happy New Year 1959. I heard a song playing from somewhere, "If I Didn't Care" by... I thought about it for a few moments, trying to remember the group. Then I suddenly realized I was in hostile territory, populated by hostile, psychotic superhumans run by a guy who didn't believe in God or government. Somehow trying to remember a music group seemed like one of those things better considered once I got out of here and made it to sea level. I encountered three more splicers. Two of them were apparently man and wife, fighting over who would get whatever Adam they had, and decided to take out their aggressions on me as soon as the husband noticed me. That'll teach me to get involved in a domestic dispute. The third was a woman wearing some kind of striped jumpsuit. Only after I'd shocked her and brained her with my wrench did I notice the massive deformation of her head, like some massive cancerous growth had decided to mate with it. The entire left side of her head was this mass of fleshy lesions. I had to stop for a minute. The worst part was, the bigger shock wasn't this poor woman's appearance. The bigger shock was how much I enjoyed using the electroblast. I sat down, holding my head. The plasmid apparently backed off when I used my hands to touch my own body, which gave me a huge sense of relief. The last thing I wanted was to take a piss and find out just how well urine conducted electricity. The more I used this plasmid, the more I wanted to feel its power. With it, I wasn't just a human anymore. I was Thor. I was Zeus. I was suddenly reminded of a book, Alice in Wonderland, a scene where Alice complained, "But I don't want to go among mad people." The Cheshire Cat said without remorse, "Oh, you can't help that. We're all mad down here." I mentally shook myself. I am not going to go crazy, I said to myself in a low whisper. I'm only going to use what I need to survive long enough to get out of here. That's it. That's all. Boy, are you all right? Atlas said. No, but I'll manage. I stood up. Good, because you need to see what's in the next room. It's important. I nodded, heading through the hole in the bathroom to an area overlooking what looked like a small stage. Would you kindly lower your weapon for a minute? Now is not the time to be looking hostile. I lowered the wrench and moved over the stage, using the framework holding up the stage lights. As I did, I saw another one of those creepy little girls dressed in a dirty little dress. She was singing and jabbing a corpse with something that looked like an unhealthy melding of a syringe, a gas station nozzle, and a baby bottle. Atlas described her as a little sister, a harmless child turned into a monster for the sole purpose of gathering Adam. As I moved down the stairs nearby, I saw the doors open through the reinforced window and saw another splicer enter the room. I knew these splicers wanted Adam, and if this girl thing was a gatherer... I went to the window looking for a means to get in and take that splicer out. He'd rip her into pieces to get the Adam he wanted. I wanted to scream at her, tell her to run, but as it turned out, I never needed to worry. She let out a scream and an answering bellow was heard from above. I looked up to see a massive humanoid drop down, dressed in something like a deep diving suit. Only this thing was a Hulk, and had a bulbous head with small lights all over it, currently blazing red, with a drill for a right arm. The splicer began firing its pistol at the thing, but he might as well have used spitballs to stop a runaway freight train. The creature ignored the bullets, smacking the splicer into the back wall, then ramming the spinning drill through his midsection. As if that wasn't bad enough, it grabbed the splicer's head and slammed it against the reinforced glass, breaking through it on the third hit. The splicer's body hung halfway through the glass as the monster turned back to the little girl, reaching out a hand. His little sister smiled and took the hand, happily walking away. What the hell? That's the big daddy. She gathers the Adam, he keeps us safe, Atlas answered. Now, would you kindly find a pneumo? Why? I've got something here that'll keep you from getting cut down with the first security bot, you see. Is it something I'm going to need to inject? Yeah, just find a pneumo. Once you get there, I'll send it your way. What does it do? It's a gene tonic called Spore Boost. It'll make you stronger and faster. Most importantly, it contains Adam from other people. Once it rewrites your genetics, it'll mark you as someone who belongs here. It won't keep you from being attacked by splicers or invisible to Andrew Ryan's eyes and ears, but it will keep you from being casually gunned down. I nodded, but was instantly suspicious. What if it was more than that? Did he suspect me? Would the plasmid enable him to take control over me, or worse, give him the means to kill me with a word? What could he do with a plasmid or gene tonic? For that matter, what couldn't he do? I looked around from the inside of the footlight theater, wondering if I wouldn't be just better off waiting here. It would be easy, just wait here for the next splicer to come along and... I shook my head. No, 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 no. Whatever happened, I was not going to die like some whimpering animal in the dark. I was not going to curl up and die. I was getting out of this whacked out excuse for Atlantis, and I was going to leave it behind or die trying. Bioshock, Part 2. I didn't have much time to figure out what to do next. After meeting the maniacs that run the asylum here, I was eager to leave the so-called Welcome Center. I felt about as welcome as an IRS audit. I crept through the Welcome Center to the entrance of the Metro, scared that every shadow held an armed psychopath lurking inside, ready to disembowel me. What made it truly disturbing is that these people were dressed like normal people, just distorted, horribly distorted. Please, God, let there be some sane people where I'm going. Atlas, where am I going? I whispered into the service radio. Neptune's Bounty. You'll need to get into Fontaine's Fisheries. Hidden there is a secret submarine dock. I'll meet you there with my family and we'll all get out of there. I wanted to ask him why he and his family didn't just leave before I arrived there, but I had a feeling any uncomfortable questions would result in him withdrawing his help. Worse yet, he might decide to use me as a decoy while he and his family made it to safety. Even so, I wasn't sure that wasn't his plan already. All right, coming up on the entrance. I lifted the pistol from the baby carriage. I'm 20 yards. A gate slid shut over the entrance, and something was emerging from the floor behind the gate. Looks like some kind of dispenser on a chair. Holy! All coherent thought from that point on went away, replaced by gut instinct. I backpedaled just in time to see a gout of flame come from an improvised turret in front of me. A second or two of delay, and I would have been barbecued my own juices. As I looked for something that might turn it off, red lights started flashing. It's Ryan! Goddamn Andrew Ryan! He's found us! Damn it! He showed full access to Neptune. Right, there's another way to get here. Head to medical. What are you waiting for? Go! I had no choice but to turn in the opposite direction, heading for the medical pavilion. As I did, I caught sight of a banner hung to my right with the words, "Altruism is the root of all wickedness," emblazoned in gold. Great. Nice to know when everyone decided to go crazy, was within walking distance. I ran through the only way out, heading to a pressure door, and turned the wheel that would allow me to escape. Except it wouldn't turn. Atlas, I'm twisting in the wind here. You're trapped. Gonna try to override the exit from here. I looked around, suddenly being very alone and very exposed. The lights went out for a few moments, then the lights came on. Only the source was a huge TV screen showing a message in black and white. Please stand by. It vanished a short time later, replaced by a picture of a man's face partially obscured by the brim of his hat. Saul, a voice boomed out from the loudspeakers. Tell me, friend, which one of the bitches sent you? Was it the KGB wolf or the CIA jackal? Here's the news. Rapture isn't some sunken ship for you to plunder, and Andrew Ryan isn't some giddy socialite who can be slapped around by government muscle. I was about to ask him, what about me implied that I was anybody's muscle, when I heard the sound of groaning and voices somewhere I couldn't see. Rapture's residents were all around me, though I couldn't see them. What I heard made my skin crawl. Ryan continued on, and with that, farewell, or das Vidania, whichever you prefer. The screen went back to the standby page. I took a breath and heard people yelling, screaming. They pushed up against the reinforced window around the chamber I was in, beating on it with their fists and pipes. It sounded like there were dozens of them out there. A few hundred of them. And then the reinforced window started to crack and give way. Just when I was starting to wonder how quickly it would be over, the wheel on the door behind me spun as the door opened. I got it! Get out of there! Get out now! He didn't need to tell me twice. I ran through the door, closing it behind me, then opened the door on the other side. I was in some kind of airlock. As the door on the other side opened, I saw a tunnel made of clear material. It didn't look like glass. Must have been some kind of a thick, clear plastic. And at the moment, I didn't care. I ran as if the devil and his legions were hot on my trail, which weren't far from the truth. As I ran, I heard Atlas telling me, "And now you've met Andrew Ryan, the bloody king of Rapture." Yeah, bloody was a word for it. Now, find your way to a place called Emergency Access. I wanted to tell them that I understood, that I figured out there must have been another way to get where I needed to go. Only problem was, I wasn't sure how much he wanted or didn't want me to know. So until opportunity presents itself, best to sound dumb and look lucky. I got to the airlock and opened it, revealing a poster of a smiling beauty hanging on a dirty wall, talking about Steinman's Cosmetic Enhancement. Not a good sign. There was other furniture in the foyer, all dirty, ragged in some places. When I turned right, I saw a large sign that said Medical Pavilion in glowing neon. Popular method of promotion around here. Hanging crooked. Great. Calling Dr. Kill Patient. The adrenaline was still pumping through my system, but I knew enough about biology to know at one point I was going to run out and my body would make me pay for all this excitement and running around. I had to find a safe place to rest or I wouldn't need to worry about the splicers killing me. Fear of them would be enough. I raised my left hand, seeing blue lightning coursing through my veins. And there was this little chestnut. This would certainly help for the short term, but what about the long term? Looking around Rapture was giving me a horrible feeling. I was already seeing the long-term effects. I suddenly heard a female voice and spun around, looking for another attack. But it was an announcer on the PA system saying, "Parasites hate three things: free markets, free will, and free men." Man, did but they laid it on thick here. I moved forward, then saw a doctor and a nurse come out on a balcony overlooking the foyer. The nurse was packing a pistol, and the doc has traded in his scalpel for a pipe. They turned, saw me, and for a brief moment, nobody moved. Then the nurse screamed, "You people will never amount to anything!" and charged down the stairs. Right, more murder psychopaths. Was everyone in this fishbowl completely out of their minds? Didn't have much time to ponder that, pulling up the pistol and firing, backing away. The nurse took three shots before going down, but not before she put one into my right shoulder, pain blossoming there and taking root. I was running low on bullets, and then I remembered the electricity in my hands. The doctor was almost on me when I threw a bolt of lightning at him, shocking him where he stood and short-circuiting his nervous system. It didn't look like it would kill him, and I only had two bullets left. I knew I had to save one for myself, so I aimed and put a round into his skull. That did the trick. I looked down at the two bodies. I didn't feel sick like I did before. Not sure if that was good or bad, so I checked them both. More bullets and a medical container colored white and red. Inside were bandages, a tube of some milky gel, and a syringe filled with a green substance. Looked like an upgrade from the first aid kit I'd seen earlier. I took a closer look and found instructions on the lid of the tin. Inject the fluid into the wound, spread the gel in the wound, bandage it up. I looked again. That was it. No special conditions, nothing. I looked down at the bleeding wound in my shoulder. Not much choice. I uncapped the syringe while a part of me screamed, "Are you insane? What if you have some kind of reaction? That could be poisonous for all you know." My answer back to that part of my noggin was a rapid, "I couldn't possibly be that lucky." And I injected the wound with the stuff. My whole shoulder went numb. Wow, this stuff worked fast. I smeared as much of the gel as I could over it, then I saw something that blew my mind. The bullet was actually forced out of the wound, dropping to the floor. I squeezed the rest of the gel on and wrapped the gauze bandage around it. No pain at all, just a faint, itchy sensation. I hope to God the cure wasn't worse than the disease. From what I've seen so far in the medical pavilion, the whole first do no harm thing seems to have been put by the wayside. All right, enough complaining about the situation. I checked the area, finding money, ammunition, and another one of those self-contained audio record playback things. Found a couple of them in the Welcome Center. Looked pretty sophisticated. I hunkered down behind the reception desk where I'd found it and hit play on the first one I found. It started up and I heard the sounds of a party going on. I heard some jazz song, but I didn't recognize the tune. Then I heard a woman's voice. "Another new year, another night alone. I'm out, and you're stuck in Hephaestus working. Imagine my surprise. I just guess I'll have another drink. Here's a toast to Diane McClintock, silliest girl in Rapture. Silly enough to fall in love with Andrew Ryan. Silly enough to..." There was a sound of an explosion, screaming, people yelling. "Long live Atlas, and death to Ryan." And then Diane was talking again. "What? What happened? I'm bleeding. Oh, God, what's happening?" Then the audio stopped. I sat there, and my shoulder wasn't the only thing that was numb. The damaged signs, the mask that these splicers were wearing, it all started on New Year's Eve, 1959. I played the next one, some bull about a damaged wall. The one I just picked up was from the same person, Diane. "Dr. Steinman said he'd release me today. Ryan didn't come to see me since the New Year's attack. Not once. But Dr. Steinman was very attentive. He told me that once the scar tissue's gone, he's going to fix me right up. Make me prettier than any girl I've ever seen. He's sweet, all right. And so interested in my case." Hope. Even down here, Diane had the right idea, all right, and I wasn't about to forget it anytime soon. I'll defend myself from people trying to kill me. If they wanted a war, well, then I was going to give them one. That sounded so much better in my head before I realized that I was horribly outmanned and outgunned. I got up, reloaded, and decided to do some more exploring. 30 minutes had gone by. So much could happen in 30 minutes. I discovered that the method used for getting down here in the bathysphere was similar for making some adjustments to the local machinery. I found an object with a set of dual propellers next to a display for security bots and got it working, finding out the system had a very sophisticated mechanism for identifying who was friendly and who wasn't. The thought of trying to subvert the system itself was daunting until I realized I didn't have to change the system. I had to just change one part of it, switching from friendly to foe. Once I figured out how to do that, the system came on, and the bot lifted into the air, following me around like a puppy. One heavily armed puppy. I found one of those turrets, then considered how to get even close to it without being shot. The solution was literally in the palm of my hand. After zapping it, I ran up to it to examine it. It was resetting itself, so I didn't have a lot of time. However, I did have a lot of practice. I switched it over and the red light at the top turned green. Now it just cycled back and forth. I found another one, then a couple of cameras, doing the same to them. 10 minutes of work and patience, and I could finally breathe. Anyone trying to sneak up on me and try to wish me harm was going to find out how it felt to be on the wrong end of a firing squad. Well, it was nice when it lasted. Just when I thought I was going to be able to make it through this without further issue, I find out that any attempt to get out of this particular wing of the loony bin requires one tiny little item. The key to this district. Turns out the way out required the key of one Dr. J.S. Steinman, head of the medical pavilion, and based on what Atlas informed me about him, a good doctor ain't good no more. In fact, Atlas warned me that Steinman might be the biggest loony in this bin. He's the one who runs the place, but I don't expect him to hound at you out of the milk of human kindness. Steinman ain't that kind, and frankly, I'm not even sure he's still human. Any good news you can provide? Well, boy, oh, there's ways and then there's ways. I can direct you to a couple of new plasmids that'll make things easier for you. Incinerate and telekinesis. Let me guess. Throw fireballs and move things with my hand. Miracles of Adam, friend. Considering how other users of these wonderful products are misshaken and stark raving mad, why would I even consider getting these plasmids? Because you're going to need them. For one thing, there's many places where you're going to go that are frozen over, and you'll need incinerate to melt the ice away. Second, you're going to find that Steinman just loves throwing things that go boom. Unless you got the reflexes of a cow and coffee, you'll need something to protect yourself. And throwing them back has a happier ending than just catching them, get me? So it's either a slow death or a quick one. And something else to shoot for. You could beat our sweepstakes odds and be one of those blessed few who's immune to the debilitating effects of Adam. Or at least the resistance to your cellular breakdown. You're not from here, so there is a chance. Yeah, I thought. A chance you'll string me along until I do what you want me to do. All right, I said out loud. You win. Just show me where I can get these things. Will do. Just be careful. I've got a feeling I'm not the only one interested in your welfare. What makes you say that? Ryan's still on the lookout for you. He knows you're not dead yet, but he's not sure where you are. And there's someone else looking in on you, and it ain't me or Ryan. Whoever it is, it's a pretty safe bet that they're taking an interest in you because they think you can be an asset they can exploit. I thought to myself, whereas you're just helping me out of the goodness of your heart, right? Okay, I said aloud. Right, and watch out for anyone trying to take advantage of me. I'm not sure I care for your insinuations, boyo. I didn't think I was making any. I'm going to chalk this up to the stress of what you're having to do, but get this straight. I'm not the enemy here. You and me are on the same side. Right. Like pawns and kings, I thought. Sorry, it's just that 24 hours ago, all of this would have been science fiction to me, like something Ray Bradbury would write. Now, not only am I living it, but it's trying to kill me. He waited just the right amount of time to say, "You're right. I know I'm putting a lot on you. I've spent years dealing with this, but it's your first day. So I have to remember what things were like before I came to Rapture. And let's just say we set our mea culpas and get out of here. That's it. Let them think I'm giving him an out." "Agreed, boyo. Now the first thing you need to do is get the incinerate. Actually, first thing I need to do is get to a lab." "What for?" "Well, you're saying I need incinerate to use heat to get past obstacles. Well, before I start untwisting and retwisting my genetic code again, I want to make sure there isn't another way to do it." I looked around. "With all these people and other fittings, there has to be a machine shop around here somewhere. The machine shop comes with assembling torches. And what exactly are you going to do about stalling them?" "What I had to. Before I start loading them on stuff that can make my skin melt off, I'm going to use what I already have." The machine shop was further on, and as it turned out, was close to some of the other medical labs on this level, giving me ample supplies to make an improvised flamethrower. Added some wiring to a hand grip so I could use the electricity I now wielded to cause an ignition spark. After a brief test or two, while I adjusted the heat output, I pronounced my new weapon a success. In addition to a modified Tommy gun, I also found new types of ammunition, armor-piercing, and anti-personal rounds. These guys had a regular arms race going on. Thus armed, I set about my task. It made sense that I would need to get better equipped soon. Only the sick, the truly sick, would be trapped in here with a mad doctor, so it made sense that things would get tougher once I left. Having better weapons would come in handy, all right. Normal bullets were starting to lose their effectiveness against these things. I've also found containers of what seemed to be gene tonics, which, if acted as advertised in the Bible, on the bottles, provided different boosts to mind and body. I took them, but I didn't use them. I am desperate, but I am not that desperate yet. I also found containers of what seemed to be called gene tonics, which, if acted as advertised on the bottles, provided different boosts to mind and body. I took them, but I didn't use them. I may have been desperate, but I'm not that desperate yet. I explored the rest of the pavilion, finding more of the same. Crazed splicers, no sense of tactics, looking around and charging me as soon as they saw me, even leaping through the air trying to get me. With my new weaponry, taking them out was getting easier, both physically and emotionally. Some of them even died looking at me with grateful expressions on their faces. Some of them, however, were really sneaky. I came to one area near a dental office and saw a shotgun with a dead splicer right out in the middle of the floor. Even the lights in the room were angled to focus on it. I just knew as soon as I picked it up, I was going to find myself in the middle of a meat grinder, so I looked around and found my answer. An area of the hallway that was flooded. I looked around, faced the hallway, and picked up the shotgun. As expected, the lights went out. I ran to the hallway and splashed through it until I reached the sofa, then climbed up on it as high as I could go, then waited. Sure enough, I heard yelling as a group of splicers chased after me. I waited until I heard splashing, and then threw lightning at the water until their voices went away. I ignored the nagging feelings in my head about how good it felt to take them out, or the disgust at having to loot their corpses for supplies. I couldn't afford to let it get to me. Not here. This was no place to lose it. Out of here in the open. Especially after finding more audio boxes and hearing how Dr. Steinman was going completely around the bend, ranting about Aphrodite, and spouting off about how beauty was no longer an option, but a mandatory right, thanks to Adam. I'm about to have to get a key from a complete psycho. My life was officially in the crapper, waiting for someone to flush. I made my way to the appropriately named Steinman's Aesthetic Ideals, finding the doc rummaging around, saying to himself, "Why do we have two eyes? Is there some law that say we must? Two arms, two legs, two ears, two breasts. As soon as he saw me, though, he was clearly interested in taking walk-in appointments and ran through a doorway, screaming and blowing up a sign above the door and blocking it with debris. Before I could even fathom this, another doctor came out on the balcony overlooking the entrance to Steinman's sanctum, trying to perform some reconstructive surgery on me with explosives. I heard Atlas say, "Still think you can do without telekinesis?" "I'm sorry," I said with what I hoped was a sarcastic tone, "but Mark isn't here right now, but if you'd like to leave a message, just wait for the goddamn beep." "Well, if you want a better idea, that'll be a good time, innit?" "I'm thinking." I looked down the hallway, seeing the discarded medical equipment, the gurney, the wheelchair, the... I smiled as my eyes fell upon the solution. "I've got an idea." Then I moved, put a round of anti-personal pistol ammo into Dr. Warren Spahn, and dropped him like a bad habit. Then I went up to the balcony hallway, and I looked for what I needed. Thankfully, I didn't have to go far. "You know what the big problem is around here, Atlas?" "I'm all ears, boyo." "People got so used to using plasmids to do what they need to do, they forgot that there were still non-plasmid ways to do things." I heaved the gas tank into place, then backed up behind the barrier I'd used earlier, and took careful aim with the pistol, then fired. A hole appeared in the tank, and a hissing noise could be heard. Then I grabbed a shotgun loaded with an electric buck round, then fired. That did it. I felt the blast wave and pulled back before the blast cleared debris, not to mention my sinuses. My ears were ringing a bit, but I was none the worse, and the way was clear to get to Steinman. Of course, knowing him, he'd probably not be happy to see me based on all the pictures I've seen about the pavilion. PCL pictures of women he thought were perfection. Patchwork people. Picasso paintings brought to life. And if people here were any indication, he was likely to be deeply insane and heavily armed. I moved deeper into aesthetic ideals, founding a couple of traps laid, mechanic ones. Firing a few electrical bolts put them to sleep, and a few minutes with their innards put them to work for me. And I scavenged around the area and found some more resources, a couple of audio boxes and some first aid kits. I was beginning to think I needed a knapsack before I heard the yelling. Splicers were coming. I hunkered down behind one of the desks and simply waited for the shooting to stop. Between the hacked turret and my hacked security camera, the splicers trying to ambush me got ambushed in return, and I picked up a hacked security drone in the bargain. I was now to make my appointment with Stein completely free. Goody for me. As soon as I entered his personal home, I could hear him ranting as he worked on a female splicer lying on our operating table. I watched him from the observation chamber, took one look at what he was doing to her, and almost threw up again. "What can I do with this one, Aphrodite? She won't stay still. I want to make them beautiful, but they always turn out wrong. That one, too fat. This one, too tall. And this one, too symmetrical. And now..." He stopped as he looked at me. I'd been so horrified by what he was doing that I wasn't focusing on staying hidden. "What's this, goddess? An intruder? He's ugly! 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 Stupid, stupid, stupid!" I took cover as the bot recognized Steinman as a threat and went out after him. Judging from the amount of damage he could soak up, that bot wasn't going to do the trick. Okay, think, goddammit, think. First step, find your assets. I took a deep breath and ran out and skirted around the sides as Steinman and my bot fought it out. The bot was already spewing smoke and flame from one side, so I didn't have a lot of time. Our gas tanks, spilled fluid, both blood and oil, a safe and a health station, an area floated with frigid water. Okay, I had a plan. It wasn't a great plan. After I made my preparations, I looked around and listened. No more gunfire. Maybe the bot had taken Steinman out. That's when the bullet hit me in the side, like someone shoving a red-hot poker between my ribs. Only the cold of the water I was standing in numbed my body so I didn't pass out from the pain. Through the haze, I heard Steinman yelling, "We're not finished! Not finished!" I turned and ran in the opposite direction, climbing the steps out of the water, and turned and let him have it with some handheld lightning. "Do not pass out, do not pass out, pass out, and you're next on the operating table, Mark." He turned back, heading for the health station and activating it to heal himself up. What he got was a cloud with poison smacking him in the face. I took a lot more satisfaction than I probably should have in watching him fall, and limped over to the hacked health station myself to use it on myself. It bathed me in a cloud of vapor, and I breathed it in, feeling the chemical compounds regenerate, rejuvenate, and heal my body. And there were actually people that wondered how much I'd get out of my engineering degrees. If I'd survived this, I'd be able to say those skills actually saved my life. I searched Steinman and found empty medical kits, some anti-personnel ammo, and his key. "Atlas, I got it. I got his key." "You killed him." "Well, boy, I'm officially impressed. It's time somebody took care of that sick bastard. Head for emergency access. I'll be working my way to the backside of Fort Neptune myself. We'll get there soon enough." I nodded and walked over to check on the woman at the table. She was dead, thank God. After what he did to her, death was a mercy. I found something else on her. A recording. My morbid up curiosity was acting up, and I played it. Steinman. 4-0 silk and done. Nurse. "The nose looks terrific, Dr. Steinman." "Doctor? You know, looking at her now, I didn't realize how much her face sags." "Scalpel." "Excuse me? Scalpel! Doctor, she's not booked for a facelift. Let's just come in here and..." "Doctor! Doctor, stop cutting! Doctor, stop cutting! Give me the chief of surgery! Give me the chief of surgery now!" I stood there, stunned. I have to get out of this godforsaken place. But first I wanted to meet this Andrew Ryan. And kick his balls so far up into his skull he'd be able to hear himself making sperm. I made my way back after finding more splicers that had come to kill me, only to find themselves stuck between a turret and a hard place. I checked them for supplies and headed back down the hall and found it had become a crude wall instead. "Tunnel collapse," Atlas explained. "Welcome to Rapture, the world's fastest growing pile of junk." I found another tunnel, but I don't know how many more surprises I'm going to be able to take. I jerked back, saying something like "Gah!" or something equally intelligent, as one of those big daddies flew through the glass wall in the corner in front of me. From the look of it, for once, the Big Daddy was on the receiving end. I moved closer, then entered the room, seeing a splicer going after one of those weird little girls. "It's a little one. Now's your chance to get some atom." I ignored Atlas, moving closer. As I got a closer look at her, I felt a stab in my heart as I realized what she was. Someone's child warped into this thing. As the splicer got closer to her, I raised my pistols, but then I heard gunshots as someone put two into the splicer's head. I looked up to see a woman, tall, thin, with straggly hair. "Stay away from her," she commanded, leveling the gun at me, "or it will be you who will be shot next." "Easy now, Doctor. He's just looking for a wee bit of atom, just enough to get by." Looks like I'm not the only person Atlas can talk to, and she obviously knows a him. "I'll not have him hurt my little ones," she said, that same voice of command. It took me a few minutes to recognize it, the sound of Mama Bear protecting her cubs. "It's okay, lad. That's not a child. Not anymore," yanked Dr. Tenenbaum saw to that. I turned to look at the little sister. She was backing away from me, scared out of her mind. Probably saw me no different than that splicer that wanted to cut her open to get her what he wanted. "Peter, did you not hurt her? Have you no heart?" she pleaded. "Ah, that's a pretty sermon coming from the ghoul who cooked up them creatures in the first place. took fine little girls and turned them into that. Listen to me, boyo. You won't survive without the atom those things are carrying. Are you prepared to trade your life, the lives of my wife and child, for 10 bombs of the Frankensteins? As Atlas went on, I walked closer to the little sister. She had Adam, and that was the currency of this place. She was helpful, vulnerable, and all I had to do was to get it was rip some disgusting slug out of a little girl's body. No, I am not that person. I am not that thing. I turned back to Dr. Tenenbaum. Can you change them back? She nodded. There is another way. She threw me a tonic jar with a glowing red substance within it. I caught it on the fly and looked at it, then up at Dr. Tenenbaum. Use that, and it will free them from their torment. I will make it work your while, somehow. Now, how's it work? Your skin will secrete a substance that, when it makes contact with one of my little ones, will excise the slug within her. When she coughs it up, you can take what atom you can. It will not be as much as you could have. To hell with the atom! Will the girl be all right? Dr. Tenenbaum stared at me as if I suddenly shat an elephant. She will recover, she said, after a moment. I popped the top and drank every drop. It burned going down, and I felt like I was going to throw it back up, but anything was better than an alternative. After I was sure I wasn't going to puke up something that would try to make a break for freedom, I walked over to the girl and reached for her. She pulled away from me, whimpering and crying. Finally, I made a grab for her, lifting her up. She still struggled, pushing me away, and I put my hand on her cheek. Her skin began to glow, veins of light traveling from where my hand touched her, and then there was a flash. I blinked, and there was a sound of something wet hitting the floor. My vision cleared as I heard a voice, one that wasn't sounding alien. Thank you, mister. She was still wearing her dirty dress, barefoot, but her skin tone was normal, and she had brown eyes. She was beautiful. I nearly wept when I saw her. For once, something happened in this wretched place that was horrifying. I watched as she ran for the vent, climbing up and inside. Is she gonna be all right? She will be now. I turned back to Dr. Tenenbaum, but she was gone. I picked up the slug and looked around for her container. Fortunately, it's easy to find specimen jars in a medical lab. After squeezing the atom out of the thing and tossing it away, I headed for emergency access, hoping that I could at least get to Fontaine's Fisheries without too much more excitement. I should really stop doing that, asking for things I can't get. What is your name? Tenenbaum on the radio. I picked it up. I'm nobody. Shades of Ulysses? I allowed myself a small smile. Not that big a stretch. I'm on a voyage between devils and the deep blue sea. I kept it light since it's clear Atlas could tune in on me. I'm just someone dumb enough to try to get someplace I shouldn't have gone. All things considered, I think I would have preferred dying of exposure on a deserted island in the middle of the ocean. I do not think this is coincidence. Yeah, I'm with Einstein on that one. Universe doesn't strike me as being that lazy. I need your help. Oh, the line from that forms the left. You are bitter. Really? I checked the quarters ahead. Am I that transparent? Look, Doc, I don't know if you figured it out yet, but I am no soldier. I'm not a professional killer, or a hitman, or spy, or anything that Ryan accuses me of. I am not cut out for this. Perhaps. But while you are not many things, what you are is important. And what am I? A good man. And a fast learner. I took cover, getting closer to the hallway back to the pavilion proper. What do you want from me? I want to save my little ones. But too many of them are in places I cannot reach. I need your help to kill them, send them home. But it will not be easy, and it will be dangerous. As opposed to all the not life-threatening things like hot-wiring my DNA and learning how to shoot homicidal superhumans. To rescue the little ones, you must first deal with their protectors. The Big Daddies, I sighed. This deal was getting worse all the time. Still, the thought of all those girls doomed to an existence of nothing more than being mutagenic slime factories. I'll do what I can. I can't make any promises. Hell, I don't know if I'll live to get to the fisheries. I have closed off many of the doors that lead from the clinic where the little Bortons were born. Don't you mean made? But I cannot do anything about the ones already performing their rounds. It is ingrained into their minds what they must do. Before you leave, there's one more little one in the medical pavilion. All right, I'll do my best. So with a groan, wishing my body felt as heroic as those words. The need for those plasmids were trying to make themselves heard one more, trying to make itself heard once more. And I knew that before long, that atom in my possession was going to start to look downright necessary. I had to figure out another way. Wish I could say I came up with a plan before I ran into the Big Daddy with his ward in the medical pavilion. With all the things I was wishing at this point, hey, what's one more? And the problem was, he was looking pretty intimidating. Figure that Ryan wouldn't keep using these things if they weren't cost-effective. So I couldn't underestimate it. So I kept an eye on it. Fortunately, the hacked turrets and cameras made for a bumper crop of bodies, and that meant I could use it to lead the girl where I wanted to go. Which meant I could lead him. A drawn-out fight was out of the question. I'd be a hamburger in the time it would take me to say bad idea. I had to damage the daddy in a way that wouldn't hurt the girl. I knew from the underlog that the little sister's body was capable of recovering from massive amounts of damage, but that didn't make the idea of causing that damage any easier to swallow. Then I found it. I had to work fast, it wouldn't be easy, but if it worked, I could save the girl. The plan was simple. I'd lug every gas tank I could find, set it in a hallway that was away from a body where the girl could find and gather, then lure the Big Daddy to the tanks, hit the lug with as much voltage from my fingers as I could muster, and then use my gun to set off the tanks. The Big Daddy would find out the wonders of being in a closed space with the episodes going off, and the girl would be fine. I can just ask. Then I found it. I had to work fast, and it wouldn't be easy. But if it worked, I could save the girl. The plan was simple. Lug every gas tank I could find, set in a hallway that was away from a body where the girl could gather, then lure the Big Daddy to the tanks, hit the lug with as much voltage from my fingers as I could muster, and then use my gun to set off the tanks. The Big Daddy would find out the wonders of being in an enclosed space while explosions were going off, and the girl would be fine. Then I could cure, send her on her way, then head for emergency access. It was a perfect plan. It should have been my first clue on how it could go wrong.